Hello, this is Nathan Batty with ChristianResearcher.com, and we're thankful that you've joined us for another study in the book of Hebrews. Today we'll pick up in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 14, and read down through through Hebrews chapter 5, verse 10. Begin reading there in verse 14, the Bible says, "Seeing then that we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let's hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weakness, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let's therefore come boldly to the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in times of need. For every high priest taken from among men is appointed for men and things pertaining to God, that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sin. He can have compassion on those who are ignorant and going astray, since he himself is also subject to weakness. Because of this, he is required, as for the people, so also for himself, to offer sacrifice for sins. And no man takes this honor to himself, but he was called by God, just as Aaron was. So also Christ did not glorify himself to become high priest, but it was he who said to him, 'You are my son, today I have begotten you.' As he also says in another place, 'You are a priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek,' who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplication with vehement cries and tears to him who was able to save from death and was heard because of his godly fear, though he was a son, yet he learned obedience by the things which he suffered. And having been perfected, he became the author of eternal salvation to all who obey him, called by God as high priest according to the order of Melchizedek, of whom we have much to say and hard to explain since you have become dull of hearing." In Hebrews chapter 4, verse 14 down through verse 16, you have an introduction and a shift that is performed that brings us into chapter 5. Previous to these verses, Jesus has been referred to as the Son, and the sonship of Christ is what is being stressed, and now a shift is occurring from son to priest. There are three arguments that are set forth by the Hebrew writer at the end of chapter 4 to emphasize the shift from son to priest. Number one, he points out explicitly, we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. We do have a high priest, this Jesus who has ascended back into heaven, he is now there serving as priest. Argument number two, for we do not have a high priest cannot sympathize with our weakness, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. This high priest is no ordinary person. He can sympathize with us. I want you to think about this. He's writing to people who are going through very difficult times, persecution, struggles. Are they having difficulty with the circumstances that they find themselves in? Their high priest found himself in similar circumstances. Are you afraid of being persecuted? Well, Jesus was persecuted just like you've been. Are you afraid of being arrested, maybe even put to death? Jesus can relate to you, for he has suffered in every single way, just like you, yet he did so without sin. In other words, he placed his focus upon God the Father and doing the will of the Father. May you set your focus in the same area in which your high priest has set his. He says, verse 16, the third point, "Let us therefore come boldly to the throne of grace that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in a time of need." There are several things that are being argued here. Since we have a high priest who's back in heaven now, interceding for us before God, we can go directly to the throne of God's grace. Now, there's something that was never allowed under the Old Testament. The people had to bring their confession to the high priest, and he would then enter into the most holy places and present it to God. Now, we can go directly before the throne of God because that's where Jesus sits, administering on our behalf. So there's great benefit. He says he can find grace to help in a time of need. In difficult times, the hope that we have as Christians is our high priest who is in heaven interceding for us. If we leave that and we go back to the old system that's been done away with, we have nothing in these difficult times. He goes on, verse 1 of chapter 5 now. "For every high priest is taken from among men, is appointed for men in things pertaining to God, that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins. For he can have compassion on those who are ignorant and going astray, since he himself is also subject to weakness. Because of this, he is required, as for the people, so also for himself, to offer sacrifices for sins. And no man takes his honor on himself, but he who is called by God, just as Aaron was." This is developing several thoughts about the Old Testament priesthood. Number one, priests were appointed to the position. They didn't take it upon themselves. They had a relation. They were like the people that they served. They had weaknesses. They had difficulty. In fact, as high priests were offering sins for the people, they were also offering sins for themselves. Now, I want you to notice an awesome thing in the construction of this passage. In verse 4, we'll kind of work from the middle and then work outward. In verse 4, you have the humility of the high priest that's under consideration. Then in verse 5 and 6, you have the humility of Christ that's under consideration. So there's a parallel that's going on in the structure there. You back up a couple verses. In verses 2 through 3, you have a discussion of how the high priest related to the people. In verses 7 and 8, you have a discussion of how Jesus, the new high priest, relates to his people. You back up to verse 1. It's a discussion of the Old Testament office itself of high priest. In verse 9 and 10, it speaks about the new high priestly office that Jesus inhabits. And so you have this concentric form that's going throughout. It begins in the middle as parallels, and as you back up, you see parallels throughout the passage. That's very important to keep in mind. What's under consideration is Jesus' humility, how he related to the people, and also his office itself. Jesus was fully qualified to be the high priest. He could relate to the people. He'd gone through everything that they had, even more so, yet without sin. This is the factor that distinguishes him from the Aaronic priesthood. He never had sin. He was far greater and above than the priest of the Old Testament. Now, notice in verse 5 it says, "So also Christ did not glorify himself to become high priest, but it was he who said to him, 'You are my son, today I have begotten you.'" Now, that verse should be familiar to you. It should ring a bell, because over in chapter 1, this is where the passage began. In chapter 1, verse 5, as he quotes, I believe it's 6 quotations there from the Old Testament in reference to Jesus' sonship. The first one is from Psalm chapter 2, verse 7, which is where we are right now. "You are my son, today I have begotten you." The reason that the Hebrew writer requotes this is to emphasize Jesus is the enthroned Son of God. This is the enthronement. And now we're going to address another aspect of what it means to be the enthroned Son. And so he quotes from Psalm chapter 110, verse 4. Now, this should be a little bit familiar to us as well, because in chapter 1, the last passage that he quoted was Psalm 110, verse 1. And he quotes it there to establish this, the ultimate reigning Christ scene. He's going to reign on his throne. He's seated at the right hand of God. He's going to reign till all his enemies are put under his feet. But he's not just reigning as king. Verse 4 of that same passage emphasizes he's also reigning as priest. And so the focus shifts from just the enthroned sonship of God to the enthroned priesthood of God. "You are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek." He did not take this upon himself. God placed this priestly office upon him, and this was always the plan of God, that Christ should be high priest. Now in verse 7 it says, "In the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplication." This points out that Jesus existed before the days of his flesh. That's what the implication is. Christ is eternal. He is deity and had always been there. And then in the days of his flesh, he became incarnate. He offered up prayers and supplication. Rather than offering the animal sacrifices that the high priest offered, he is offering prayers and supplications. And the Bible says, with vehement cries and tears. In other words, his sacrifice of himself. And the prayers and supplication we see in the Garden of Gethsemane when he was under great distress, that was the offering system that Christ was bringing into the world to purchase our salvation. He was performing the role of great high priest there in the garden. He says, who is able to, let me back up to verse 7, "who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplication with vehement cries and tears to him who was able to save from death and was heard because of his godly fear." Why was Jesus' prayer heard? Why was his sacrifice acceptable? Because of his godly fear. He was humble. He was obedient in all things. He feared God and he kept God's commandments. And therefore, his sacrifice and his prayers were heard. Verse 8, "though he was a son, yet he learned obedience through the things which he suffered." Christ learned what his position was. He learned what his sacrifice was going to be. And having learned that, he put himself through great suffering to become the ultimate sacrifice and to become our high priest in offering that sacrifice. Verse 9, "and having been perfected, he became the author of eternal salvation to all those who obey him." He can now offer salvation to everyone because through fear and humble obedience, he learned obedience through the things which he suffered. Now, there's an important phrase there. It says, to all who obey him. Jesus did not come to save everybody regardless of their faith. No, obedience is a requirement of salvation. Just as Jesus submitted himself to God and brought salvation, so we must submit ourselves to Christ in order to receive salvation. Verse 10, called by God as high priest according to the order of Melchizedek. Now, obviously, Jesus fulfilled the role of high priest, and he offered a great sacrifice, even himself, and he suffered in every way such as man, yet without sin. He can relate to his people, but the question still remains, how could he be a high priest? He wasn't of the Levitical family. And so this phrase is introduced, called by God as high priest according to the order of Melchizedek. That's part of the quotation from Psalm chapter 110, verse 4. And the point is, God had always intended for Jesus to be high priest, but not according to the Levitical priesthood, according to the high priesthood of Melchizedek, who was both king and priest. Jesus is enthroned now in heaven as king and priest. He says, verse 11, of whom we have much to say and hard to explain, since you have become dull of hearing. He's going to explain the whole proposition of how Jesus is a high priest like Melchizedek. He says, there's a lot to say, and it's difficult to explain. Why? Because you've become dull of hearing. The problem was with the people's hearing, not with the message itself. And so he's going to pause right here. He's going to take a segue, quite a lengthy segue, actually, through the end of chapter 5 and all of chapter 6, and kind of rebuking and warning and encouraging the people, listen up. We have some very important things to say. They're difficult, but they're very important. You've become dull of hearing. Snap out of it. Sharpen your listening and pay attention, because you need to understand the priestly role of Christ. I'm going to explain it to you, but you're going to have to listen up. And that's where we're going to pick up next week, is with this warning and encouragement and a rebuke about listening to why all this matters and what you should be aware of at this point that maybe you've forgotten about. We're very thankful that you tuned in, and I hope you'll consider, this is a monumental passage. We're talking about the shift from sonship to priesthood, and this is going to carry on through much of the remainder of the book. We encourage you to follow back next week as we'll discuss some difficult passages at the end of chapter 5 and in chapter 6 as well. Thanks, and have a great week this week.